The first bill on the agenda is House File 2073. This is the governor's bill. We're going to have the Office of Higher Ed run us through the language. We're down one staffer due to COVID, so we may not have the detail on the numbers today as we would have. But Commissioner Olson, well, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. And members, we're working off of House File 2073.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dennis Olson, proud to serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. And yeah, Mr. Chair, I understand that we're not going to get a spreadsheet walkthrough, but I will do my best to note the budget numbers for you and members as well. But if I fumble anything, please note that and be happy to correct.
And Commissioner Olson, this is the updated, revised governor's request, so the numbers are a little different than from what we've seen in the past.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. I believe there's an amendment, if you want me to speak to the amendment first.
All right, let's go to the amendment, A23-0066.
So, Mr. Chair and members, to the amendment, the primary goal of the amendment is to reflect the governor's recommendation in the revised budget for an additional $100 million. And the primary focus of the $100 million addition is to Minnesota State. $21 million within the amendment will be dedicated to expanded student support services. The governor's original recommendation had $5 million, and so that rounds out the entire system ask for expanded student support services for $26 million. And just as a reminder, that was a recommendation for additional mental health professionals, additional social workers, additional student support services on campus. The amendment also reflects the governor's recommendation for an additional $10 million for Minnesota State, specifically for the workforce training equipment and learning environments. And as a reminder, that was the system recommendation for teaching and learning labs and related equipment necessary for that additional expansion. The amendment also reflects the governor's recommendation for transfer scholarships within the workforce development scholarship portion, and as a reminder, that was a recommendation from the system to move the workforce development scholarships to an additional $1,000, so $2,500 up to $3,500 for transfer to a Minnesota State University. So that's a $12 million recommendation, and then a small adjustment in the individual retirement account plan, IRAP, that's $521,000. And that increases the employer contribution for the IRAP, matching the TRA employer contribution. So that rounds out Minnesota State within the amendment. For the University of Minnesota, the governor's recommending moving $10 million into the current biennium for the safety and security recommendation. The governor had originally had it in the 26-27 biennium. That remains, but $10 million now for the upcoming biennium, reflecting the current need. And then an additional $42 million for the University of Minnesota's core mission support recommendation, and $57 million in the following biennium there. The only other item outside of the two public systems in the governor's recommendation in the amendment is for the Office of Higher Education for dual training grants in the amount of $4,264,000. And that's to add transportation and childcare as eligible industry areas within the dual training grants. So that rounds out the governor's $100 million additional recommendation in the amendment. Mr. Chair.
Members, I'm going to move the amendment, so discussion to the amendment. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the employer contributions, I see it's going up to 8.75. Is there an employee match required? I don't understand how this system works. I'm new to the committee, so if you could just explain to me how that will work.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, that is my understanding as well, is that there is a current differential between the IRAP and the TRA, the two plans that faculty can participate in. And currently there's a disincentive to participate in one in the IRAP over the TRA based on that differential. My understanding is there is an employee contribution, but not specifically sure what that is. And we do have, I believe, faculty representatives here who could maybe help answer that question here from Minnesota State.
Representative Robbins, do you want someone?
Yes, thank you.
All right. I think we have one faculty rep. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mark Grant. I'm a communication studies instructor at Dakota County Technical College, and I currently help direct the governmental relations work on behalf of Minnesota State College faculty. Our faculty have a choice when they enter our campuses between TRA and IRAP. 2019, the IRS, the percentages between IRAP and TRA are different. In 2018, the IRS determined that we were out of compliance because the employee contribution to IRAP was different than the employee contribution to TRA. So that was corrected through the legislature, and now the percentage contributed by employee to TRA and IRAP match. The employer contribution stayed the same. The employee contribution are in the employee contribution to IRAP and TRA are now indexed, and we are looking to have the employer contribution between IRAP and TRA indexed as well.
Mr. Chair.
Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is the employee contribution to each, and will this amendment also index then the employer contribution?
Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Chair. Senator, the employee contribution to TRA, I believe, is 7.75. You'll forgive me, I am not a TRA participant. The employee contribution to IRAP is 4.5%. My employee and my employer. So the employer contribution in both is indexed now. The employer contribution to IRAP is 6%. The employer contribution to TRA, I believe, is currently at 7.75, possibly set to increase this summer. I don't know that for sure. This bill, I believe, will index the employer side as well.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The employee contribution in TRA and IRAP is what?
Representative. The employee contribution to IRAP and TRA is currently below at 7.75.
Representative Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you could just show me where in the language it shows it's going to be indexed going forward, I don't see that.
Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just pulling the amendment here. Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, the language currently in the amendment does not reflect an equal index.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would just like clarification on that, via email. I want to make sure we're really understanding what we're doing here.
Representative Robbins will do that. That's why we're bringing this forward today, so we can understand. And when we start to put the bill together, we'll have that for you. Thank you. Further questions to the amendment? Seeing no further questions, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. No. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To the bill, Commissioner Olson, as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, I'm going to briefly walk through the new appropriations located in Article 1 of the bill, specifically the budget proposals that pertain to the Office of Higher Education. And thank you again for the opportunity to go deeper early on in committee with the entire budget overview. So I'm just going to hit the highlights again here for the committee, since we do have now language in front of us. We also have staff here from the Office of Higher Education if any specific questions related to language in Article 2 should arise. So, Mr. Chair, first line of the bill, line 2.5, is the recommendation by the governor for state grants. And the current recommendation is $25 million each fiscal year for a biennial total of $50 million, bringing the new total in the base to $470.074 million. Mr. Chair, members, this appropriation includes the governor's proposal to respond to the federal FAFSA Simplification Act, conforming with changes to the federal needs analysis, as well as Pell Grant calculation that's scheduled to be implemented the 24-25 aid year. And as a reminder, this appropriation also includes the governor's proposal to directly benefit students by increasing the living and miscellaneous expense stipend to cover 120% of federal poverty level in the first biennium and increasing to 130% of federal poverty the following biennium. Mr. Chair, members, the next item is on line 3.6 of the bill, tribal college grants. And this appropriation supports a recommendation to support Minnesota tribal colleges through the existing Tribal College Supplemental Grant Assistance Program. This changes the funding formula to include funding for all students that attend tribal colleges, in addition to current non-beneficiary students that receive state funding. And Mr. Chair, this recommendation is $3.7 million over the biennium. The current base in the program is $300,000. Next item in the bill, Mr. Chair and members, line 3.12. This is the Intervention for College Attendance Program grants. This appropriation is a one-time proposal to provide continued support to projects that receive federal funds or did receive federal funds for the agency's ICAP program that were intended to mitigate learning loss due to decreased school time and engagement for low-income students and students of color that were impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Mr. Chair, members, the next item is on line 4.20 of the bill. It's a statewide longitudinal education data system, better known as SLEDS. This appropriation supports the governor's recommendation to invest in modernizing the IT behind these databases, supporting the development of local training, outreach, and research support, as well as training materials, and also to include external data from the National Student Clearinghouse into the databases. The current recommendation by the governor is $1.536 million over the biennium, and the current base for the SLEDS program is $3.564 million. Mr. Chair, members, the next item in the bill is on line 6.31. It's the emergency assistance for post-secondary students. This appropriation supports the proposal to invest in the state's emergency assistance program to increase the number of students receiving emergency grants by increasing the maximum amount an institution can apply for, and also the maximum student grant amount that a student can request. And the current the recommendation by the governor is an additional $4.362 million in the program. The current base is $638,000. Mr. Chair, the next item, lines 7.22 through lines 8.11. These appropriations support the recommended increases to the teacher recruitment, teacher retention, and teacher shortage proposals. These proposed increases are for all three of the existing programs. For a little bit of context here, for the teacher shortage loan repayment program, the governor's recommending $1.6 million. The current base in that program is $400,000. For the underrepresented student teacher grants, the governor is recommending $1.6 million over the biennium. The current base in that program is $2.25 million. And I'm looking for the other one, my apologies. For the grants to student teachers in shortage areas program, the governor is recommending $6 million. And the current base in that program is $1 million. Mr. Chair, the next item is on line 9.1 of the bill. It's the Loan Repayment Assistance Program. This appropriation supports the recommendation to support the work of attorneys that provide legal representation and advice to low-income clients by providing additional loan repayment options for program participants. This recommendation includes the addition of private loans for repayment within the program. Mr. Chair, the next item in the bill is on line 10.11. It's the Student Parent Support Initiative. And this appropriation supports the creation of the Student Parent Support Initiative, which is a competitive grant program for higher education institutions and participating partnering organizations to assist parents of young children and expectant parents by offering services that support their academic goals as well as their health and well-being. The language is discussed in Article 2, and we have an additional testifier here, Ms. Cullimore, who will be giving just a brief overview of the program's intent and impact following my testimony, Mr. Chair. The next item in the bill is on line 10.18. It's the Minnesota P20 Partnership Executive Director. This appropriation supports a proposal to create an executive director position to advance the work of the Minnesota P20 Partnership and carry out the statutorily mandated requirements of the P20 Partnership. The P20 Partnership was established by the legislature in 2009 and is an interagency initiative co-led by state agencies as well as the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Mr. Chair, this is a new recommendation by the governor, a total of $277,000 over the next biennium. The next item in the bill is on line 10.19. It's the Director of Tribal Relations and Public Engagement. And this appropriation will allow the Office of Higher Education to hire an agency tribal liaison to fulfill the statutory mandate to engage in meaningful tribal consultation with tribal nations through the coordination and assistance of the newly hired liaison. Mr. Chair, members, this is also a new budget recommendation of $277,000 over the biennium. The next item is on line 10.21. It's the Direct Admissions Program. This appropriation will continue the work of the Direct Admissions Program and provides funding for implementation to bring new participating high schools as well as higher education institutions into year two of the program. For the Direct Admissions Program, the current recommendation by the governor is $850,000, and the current base for the program is $150,000. The next item in the bill, Ms. Chair and members, is on line 10.24. It's the establishment of the American Indian Scholars Program. This appropriation supports the governor's recommendation to establish the American Indian Scholars Program, which provides a first dollar tuition and fee-free pathway to eligible Minnesota residents who are enrolled members or citizens of federally recognized tribal nations and all members of Minnesota tribal nations, regardless of residency. The language establishing the program is in Article 2 as well. The governor's recommendation for the program is $17 million over the biennium. The next item in the bill is on line 11.3. It's the Next Generation Nursing Assistant Initiative. This appropriation supports the proposal to continue the initiative that has previously been supported by Federal American Rescue Plan funds. And as a reminder, this proposes ongoing state funding to continue to support students with all necessary training costs, as well as the costs of books and all related expenses, including the certification exam. The governor is recommending $3 million in new funding for the program. Mr. Chair, the next item is on line 11.16. It's the Child Development Associate Pathway. And this appropriation is one time and supports the development of a transparent pathway for current Child Development Associate credential holders to be awarded academic credit that aligns with an eligible certificate, diploma, as well as degree programs at Minnesota State. Mr. Chair, this recommendation is one time of $475,000.
Commissioner Olson, Representative Hicks has a question.
I'm so sorry, Commissioner Olson. Maybe you said this and I just missed it. The Next Generation Nursing Initiative, ongoing or one time?
Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, ongoing, $1.5 million a year. All right, Mr. Chair and members, one more to round it out here. It's on a line 11.29, agency administration. This appropriation supports the governor's recommendation to maintain current staffing at the Office of Higher Education, as well as improve services to students and institutions, primarily through necessary IT upgrades within the agency. And Mr. Chair and members, that concludes the appropriation section of the bill. And like I mentioned, we do have staff here to answer any questions on language in Article 2 if necessary.
Representative Hicks has a question.
Thank you so much. Question about the agency administration. So as we were going through things, there's lots of new initiatives, there's lots of new programming, and then I heard you say maintain staffing. So I want to make sure I'm understanding. All of these new programs, all of these new initiatives, no additional staff to support those?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks. New staff necessary for programs. However, all of those related staff costs are included in the budget recommendation for the new programs through administrative costs that are associated with the programs.
Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess maintain staffing means different things to different people. So I just want to get this straight. We're way down in enrollment, but yet we're going to keep the same staff. Just a thought.
Commissioner Olson, I don't know if you need to respond.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Davids, this is staff specifically recommended for the Office of Higher Education, not related to any of the state colleges, the universities, and the University of Minnesota system.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and enrollment down, staffing being maintained. That doesn't work.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, it's not just maintained, they're adding 16 and a half FTEs in this bill. So we're increasing. And my question to the testifier is, do we know what just those new FTEs, what the cost of just those new FTEs will be?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I don't have that off the top of my head. I'd be happy to provide that in a separate spreadsheet once we pull it out of the administrative costs. All staff recommended for programs have different salary levels associated depending on the duties assigned.
Thank you. I look forward to that.
Okay. Representative Cleburne, you look like you want to ask a question, so
well, I don't really want to ask a question. It's just kind of a clarification, right? When we're talking about the ongoing funding for the Office of Higher Education, those numbers address the current employees' benefits, pay increases, inflation, costs for running the operation. And programs don't get cheaper because they have one person or 5,000 people, right? You still have to administer the program to the standard that we have set as the Higher Education Committee and Legislature. Is that correct?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Cleburne, that is correct. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We do have significant inflationary costs related to the negotiated contracts with current staff. That's a significant portion of the ongoing costs associated with current staff. I do want to note, I did misspeak, Mr. Chair, particularly to or in response to Representative David's question. Within the administrative recommendation, there are two new additional staff desperately needed in critical areas within the Office of Higher Education. One is within the audit division. We have a significant responsibility in addition to the U.S. Department of Education's compliance and the compliance required of all of our accrediting bodies. We serve an audit function tool, kind of one leg of the three-legged regulatory stool. And so there is an additional audit position in there right now. We fulfill that regulatory function with two auditors currently in the office, and we're also proposing to add an accounting officer as well, making sure that you know, our commitment to our external partners, particularly to students in financial aid and all of the related duties associated with accounting within the agency are fulfilled.
Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just thinking fewer students are utilizing these programs. Yes, we have to have the programs, top-notch programs, but there's fewer students there, so the cost, in my mind, should be less. But I think I'll just leave that, Mr. Chair, for now, because we will figure a lot of this stuff out once we get targets.
Commissioner Olson, and Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for this conversation. I just want to be 100% clear. We expect our state agencies to do really hard work and to provide oversight. And when they don't, we, this body, have really big reactions and feelings to that. But then when they come to us and say, we need staff to do those things, we say, well, why do you need staff? So I just, as someone who has been asked by this body to do things that are outside of something that I could do as a single human, but being required to do so, I know that my colleagues at state agencies, including the Office of Higher Ed, are doing the absolute best they can with the resources that they have, and that they are always accountable to this body and to the citizens of Minnesota. And so I just want to like say thank you for all of that work and make sure that you know how incredibly important I view that work and how incredibly important I view your team. So I just wanted to say that.
Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, thank you. I appreciate that as well.
Commissioner, you have one more testifier that you wish to bring up now.
Mr. Chair, yes. Ms. Miriam Cullimore to discuss briefly the intent and impact of the proposal related to the Student Parent Initiative.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Pawlowski and committee members. My name is Miriam Cullimore, and I serve as the student parent and whole family coordinator with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The governor's budget proposal seeks $13 million over the biennium to fund the Student Parent Support Initiative to be administered by OHE in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health. This initiative would provide grants to institutions of higher education to fund wraparound services for student parents, such as individualized case management, increased access to childcare, well child visits, emergency grants, among other services. If funded, this initiative creates a win-win-win scenario for our state. Student parents and their families win by gaining access to supportive services as they work toward graduation. And the need for support is evident. National research finds that while single mothers who earn college degrees experience significant benefits for themselves and their families, they are also some of the least likely to complete their degree. Only 8% of single mother undergraduates complete an associate or bachelor's degree within 6 years of their initial enrollment, compared to nearly half of non-parenting women in college. Here in Minnesota, we know student parents are likely to be women, unmarried, enrolled part-time, and low income. About half of student parents who applied for a state grant identified as BIPOC. And aside from private for-profit college enrollment, student parents who applied for a state grant were more likely to enroll at a MinState college or university. Financial resources in student parent households are tight. In the 2019-2020 academic year, over 50% of unmarried student parents who received a Minnesota state grant had annual incomes under $20,000. And according to recent findings by the Education Trust, Minnesota student parents earning minimum wage need to work about 50 hours per week in order to cover public tuition and child care costs. Student parents were disproportionately impacted by the pandemic as well. According to FAFSA data, Minnesota saw double-digit drops in the enrollment rate of student parents during the pandemic years. We have some recovery work to do, and this initiative can reduce barriers, helping bring parenting students back to school. Institutions of higher education can also win with this initiative. Student parents are highly motivated to succeed. They typically have higher GPAs than their non-parenting peers and are eager to join the workforce in order to support their families. Providing services for parenting students can help schools improve retention rates and attract these high-performing scholars. In our state, there are about 39,000 single parents over 25 who have some college credit but no degree, and an additional 30,000 single parents over 25 who've completed high school or a GED but have not pursued higher education. With college enrollment in decline, we need to find ways to engage these potential students and help them see college as a viable option. This initiative can help parents more confidently enroll. With this initiative, the state of Minnesota also wins. By supporting student parents, we invest in greater economic stability for the entire state. Single parents in our state who earn an associate's degree or higher are less likely to live in poverty and utilize fewer public assistance dollars over their lifetime. For instance, single mothers in Minnesota who graduate with an associate's degree are 48% less likely to live in poverty than with a high school graduation alone, saving Minnesota more than $21,000 in public assistance spending over their lifetime. They will earn an additional $295,000 than with a high school diploma, contributing more than $82,000 more per graduate in lifetime state taxes. Likewise, single mothers in Minnesota who graduate with a bachelor's degree are 75% less likely to live in poverty, saving Minnesota more than $36,000 in public assistance spending over their lifetime. They will earn an additional $571,000 over their lifetime than with a high school diploma alone, contributing more than $217,000 more per graduate in lifetime state taxes. State investment in services like those proposed here more than pay off based on what parenting graduates can contribute in future lifetime state taxes. The Institute for Women's Policy Research estimates significant returns on state investments, resulting in $2.95 returned for every dollar spent on childcare, $5.13 returned for every dollar spent on case management, and $4.70 returned for every dollar spent on financial aid. By these estimates, funding these services are worthy investments. The proposed initiative can mitigate the unique challenges experienced by student parents and their families while also benefiting institutions of higher education and the state of Minnesota. There is substantial support here at home, and this initiative has received national attention as well. By funding the Student Parent Support Initiative now, we open the door to higher education for more families, become leaders in providing support for student parents, and move closer to Minnesota's post-secondary attainment goal. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you again for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Any questions to the testifier members? Seeing none, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the testimony and the numbers about the number of students out there who have some credit but not, have not finished their degree was really interesting. I appreciate that those numbers. So, I'm interested. To me, it seems like it would make more sense rather than creating a grant program that goes to professional organizations, community-based organizations, post-secondary institutions, and other applicants, and creating a whole new program and standing that up. It seems like it would be better to give money to these students who are enrolled through the state grant for childcare. So can you explain to me, that seems so much simpler and cleaner. So why do we need a whole new grant program and a whole new infrastructure around this?
Ms. Cullimore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. One of the things that this program is designed to do is to allow institutions of higher education to create partnerships in the community as well as provide the services that their student body is saying that they need. This is meant so that the institutions can tailor these services and provide wraparound support rather than just giving money to the student and hoping that they make the best choices with those funds or, this really allows the schools to provide that additional support outside of just the money, the financial aspect. Often student parents are needing some other type of support in terms of coaching through the college process. Really understanding the college landscape. Many of these students are first-generation students as well, and so they have the additional challenges that come along with not understanding the college landscape and often need some of that coaching to get through.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I guess that honestly raises more questions than answers for me. I mean, I think, you know, we should trust the students to make the best decisions and have less bureaucracy in their way, but that's my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And overall on this, we're looking for another $100 million, so that means an increase of over $431 million from what I understand. This is just a supplemental. And just for example, the state grant program through OHE in 2015 was over 95 million, 2018 over 80 million, and 2022 69 million. So that's a huge decrease in the grant program, but yet we're putting more people in there to do less. And that's something we're gonna have to look at very closely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, not sure on those numbers. You may be looking at, I'm not sure what you're looking at, but that sounds like the number of students participating, not in the millions, but 69,000 sounds like the current number of students participating in the grant. The appropriation is over $210 million a year for state grant.
Mr. Chair, I got the numbers off the internet, so I just figured they're correct. That's right, Mr. Chair. That's students, not money. Students, not money. All right.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Question for Mr. Olson. So with the increase of the budget, I think with the numbers we have in front of us is a $430 million increase. Is that correct?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, that's correct.
So the goal for the Office of Higher Education, I would presume, with that big of an increase would be to get as many kids enrolled in the universities. Would that be a correct statement?
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, absolutely. And we feel as though a lot of the proposals by the governor, in addition to support to both public systems, will help facilitate that, certainly.
Representative Scott.
No, Mr. Chair,
oh,
I'm sorry.
Representative McDonald.
I should make more eye contact with the good chair. So I just want to follow that up, Mr. Olson, with I hope that I'll hear the answer that you're going to say. In addition to that increase, which is a large increase, I remember the days when Minnesota had a budget deficit. I was first elected in 2011-12. It was a $4 billion deficit. And I was brand new, of course. There was 31 of us new folks, and new in Health and Human Services, and I think it was in Public Safety. And boy, the outcry from the whole state of don't cut my budget, please just leave us harmless without raising taxes. Just do what you can. Now with the surplus, of course, I've been here 13 years. We've seen surpluses and deficit, and everybody wants more money, more money, more money. But I remember, and I'll never forget, and I'll use this as I become as I continue to legislate, those days when there was a budget deficit, the great organizations such as the Office of Higher Education and all the other agencies came in and they were so diligent, oh, we will do more with less, we will work hard, please don't cut us. And as soon as we get surpluses, boy, they want more, 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 more money. I think the appropriation is a wee bit too much considering the shape we're in here in Minnesota, because we're not guaranteed. If we have a $65 billion budget that the governor wants, we're not guaranteed we're going to have that kind of revenue coming in 24, 25, and 26, 27. There are tumultuous times in our country and in the world, as you're all aware. So I think the Office of Higher Education and the governor's budget proposal needs to be very careful, and I'm sure the good chairman is going to be probably on the side of more fiscal responsibility than in increasing a $430 million budget. But I'll get to my question, and then I'll just be still. Of that increase, how much of that funds or work, because Representative Hicks said she knows that the people at the Office of Higher Education do the best work. I don't know how she knows that, but I'm sure she's correct, and I hope that's true, is going to help kids get into the trades and into the technical colleges where they're so desperately needed, and there's so much work, and they can make so much money with so little debt. It's unthinkable. It's wonderful. So what is the Office of Higher Education, and I'll keep still now, doing with this increase to push that agenda as well? Because we so desperately need good people to do good hard work in our state.
Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, really appreciate the question, and you know, appreciate you bringing us back to 2011, 2012, during the deficit time where we really started the unfortunate pattern of disinvesting in higher education, which brings us to today. You know, it's the reason why students continue to raise the alarm over tuition increases, and you know, as you were referencing that that period, you know, I looked back and just pulled out Minnesota State's increase in tuition over those period of years, and I see 3%, the next year 3%, the next year 3.5%, a couple years in 14-15 when we froze tuition, the legislature made the choice to freeze tuition and fully fund it. That's when we took an opportunity to start righting the ship. These last few years, I think we've, you know, we've taken advantage of good budget times and continue to invest in higher education. But as Chancellor Malhotra and other leaders would say in front of the committee, these are down payments on the future. And you know, we are digging out of a deep disinvestment hole over the last decade plus. You know, and Minnesota has fared a little better than some of the other states in the region, but you know, this budget certainly reflects all that students need now, but certainly they're going to need continued investment into the future. Representative McDonald, related to your question around two-year programs and technical programs, they're all over the bill. They are absolutely all over the bill. One of the pieces in the governor's revised budget related to dual training grants, that is all an opportunity to earn while you learn in careers related to advanced manufacturing. The governor proposing to add transportation as an industry, you know, plenty of other industry specific needs in there that are deemed by Department of Employment and Economic Development as high need, but also high value occupations as well, all primarily related to technical programs and the trades. Within the governor's bill, there are opportunities for, like I had mentioned, the Next Generation Nursing Assistant Initiative. That is a pretty quick program that gets someone an opportunity to jumpstart their nursing or their healthcare career trajectory, but gets them into work fairly quickly. Again, I wouldn't consider that a two-year program. It is a certificate program, certificate-level program, but focused on immediate employment and also an immediate need within the state workforce. So, you know, I could certainly go on. We'd be happy to roll up, you know, all of the two-year technical or trades programs that are reflected in the budget. More than happy to provide that to you, but short answer, they're all over the budget, in addition to the recommendations to support primarily Minnesota State, which, you know, as you well know, has all of our two-year and technical program, public programs reflected.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, Ms. Collimore, is that correct? Just wondering, in this new program that you just told us about, is there some duplication there? Because we already have child care grants. It looks like $13.388 million forecast for that, or set aside for that. So is there some duplication?
Ms. Collimore.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that question as well. I would say that this expands that access to childcare. This would be funds allowed that would allow schools to expand perhaps the number of students that they're able to put into childcare facilities. It would allow them to create partnerships with child care providers in the community to set aside spots specifically for student parents to enroll their children into an early childhood program. So it adds to the available funds for student parents. Not all schools participate in the child care grant program either, and so this would expand to those schools that are not currently part of that program.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are the number of parents do we have data that show that the number of single parents has expanded commensurately with what we're doing here with the 13.388 and what's in your new program?
Ms. Cunningham.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm sorry, could you say that one more time?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry if it wasn't clear. So between the child care appropriations in the bill that you talked about and the $13.388 million, that we currently have in childcare have the number of single parents that would use that grant, has the number of those single parents risen as well? What does that look like year over year, a couple years back?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've not necessarily gotten great data on the number of student parents that exist in the state. It's been very difficult to get that data. We rely heavily on our FAFSA data for that. One of the things that I would say is that we spend out our, the amount that's given out in our state child care grants currently, we spend that out every single year. The demand is there. And oftentimes we're hearing from institutions of higher education that more funds are needed in these areas. This would be establishing a complementary program that goes side by side with the state grant, with the state child care grant program that's already in existence. It would also allow students or institutions of higher education to potentially start up new child care facilities on campus that would be easier to access for student parents, and kind of get back to where campuses had more options for student parents for their children to be present on campus.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for that explanation. I'm wondering if there's going to have to be a capital investment then on those campuses to build new child care centers.
I don't. The commissioner, do you need to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, no, it hasn't been expressed to us at this time.
Representative Scott, I think the majority of campuses have some type of a child care center, and we can get a report from that from particularly Minn State, but those centers exist, and they have been rather tenuous as a result of the pandemic. So we're hoping that we can continue to have those child care centers on those campuses.
Representative Scott. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I had just some information. Mr. Olson went through kind of funding since, about a decade ago. And I'm just wondering, I look at a report here that talks about U.S. birth rates dropped for the fourth year in a row. We're at as of 2018, we were at a 32-year low of birth rates. So the fact of the matter is that we're on this trend towards, because of declining birth rates, we're on a trend of declining enrollment. And so I don't know globally if this budget kind of addresses that, because the future is lower enrollment because of lower birth rates. And we are increasing, we're spending a heck of a lot of money in this budget with not only the current decline in enrollment, but for the foreseeable future. Now, I've encouraged my children to each have four children to help compensate for that, because we only had two. But I think that there has to be, we can't just budget for the here and now. We have to budget for the future, and I don't see that happening here. What I see is a budget that's really spending a lot of money that is going to put us back into deficit in future years.
Mr. Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Scott. I appreciate you highlighting the demographic cliff that, we know is shortly coming here related to fewer high school graduates, potentially fewer students enrolling in college. What's exciting about the options available within the incredible higher education landscape in the state is that, there are options and opportunities for everyone, not just newly graduating high school seniors. In Minnesota, we have close to, and I'll find the exact number if it's necessary, but close to 600,000 Minnesotans with some college, no degree. And many of them are looking for an opportunity while they work to either upskill or reskill, opportunities to earn an additional certification, an additional degree that will propel them into, renewed job opportunities or potentially a change or shift in careers completely. You know, we need to remember that there are a significant number of adult students in Minnesota, too, that either want to finish their degrees or are looking for something else. Plenty of options provided by, you know, not only our two incredible public systems, but our private college system as well. So, yeah, you know, certainly noted the research is showing us that that we are facing a demographic cliff in addition to, you know, an ever-increasing aging population. But certainly, you know, adult students are a population we can and should be focusing on as well.
Representative Scott, any more?
I would just say that there are opportunities out there for those folks now. I don't know what their demographic looks like as far as enrollment, if they're included in those more global numbers that we've been seeing. I'm assuming those are full-time students, that the numbers that we've been seeing. But that's my only comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I have two more on my list, and then we're going to have to move to the next bill. So Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want to correct for the record, my numbers were incorrect. I should have been talking students, not dollars, just so that's cleared up. But if nonpartisan staff could get me some numbers. One is, I'd like to go back to 2010 and see what the administrative costs have been, and I'd like to go back to 2010 and see what the total enrollment is. If nonpartisan could do that, that shouldn't be too tough to get. It'd be tough for me, but they're a lot smarter.
Representative Davids, they're nodding that they can get it for you.
Okay, I'd just like to see that. And then also, I don't think there'll be any bonding bills for buildings because of the lower enrollment. They should have plenty of space. And, Mr. Chairman, I guess I've just never thought about recommending how many kids my kids should have. That's pretty awesome. thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. And Representative Hicks, you have one.
I was just going to say that is, like, my favorite topic. So one of the things that I just want to say about that as a large family is that if we want to attract people to Minnesota and encourage folks to have more kids, we need to make that possible for people. We need to make it financially possible to both achieve their goals and expand their family. And so I'm excited about any proposal that does that all the time. So thank you so much.
Commissioner Olson, thank you. Before we move on to the next bill, I think Representative Wogemond has a motion for us.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the minutes of our previous meeting that took place on March 16th, 2023.
Representative Vogelbaum moves the minutes of March 16th. Is there any discussion to the motion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1840, Representative Cleavorn, but this is, again, it's a University of Minnesota operation and maintenance funding. So, Representative Cleavorn, you're going to need some assistance, and I see the assistance coming at us right now. So, Representative Cleavorn, I think you're just going to give an introductory statement, and we're going to have staff walk through the bill, and then we're going to have the heavy lifting done by Myron Franz. Is that the order?
I think that's awesome. Thank you.
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm happy to be before you today carrying House File 1840, the University of Minnesota's Operation and Maintenance Request. The committee has already heard the budget request overview from the university earlier, and we've had a wonderfully robust conversation. I do have an author's amendment that I would like to bring before the committee.
All right, to the amendment.
I'd like to move the A1 amendment to be adopted. And the amendment, you will see on lines 1.2 of the amendment, it changes the appropriation to $742,818,000. Then after on page 1, after line 10, it inserts two items that I think would be of interest to the committee. It inserts a tuition freeze on lines 1.5 through 1.7, and then it adds the scholarship for the American Indian undergraduate students that I believe is also somewhat represented in the governor's bill. And then the last part of the amendment merely renumbers the items that are in the original bill. And that is the A1, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the A1 amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Representative Cleburne, to the bill as amended.
To the bill 1840 as amended, the beginning sections are the appropriation to the University of Minnesota for operations and maintenance. Lines 1.7 through 1.9 outline the money appropriated from the general fund to the Board of Regents. Then you will see, in addition to the items that I discussed in the A1, you will see on line 1.11 of the original bill before amended, you will see that $15 million are added in each year, 2024 and 2025, particularly related to the university's medical school to increase research capacity, improve the school's rankings, ensure medical school's national prominence, invest in physician training, and translate the medical school's medical research into discoveries. And Mr. Chair, I think that's really, on the second page of the bill, it talks about the $7.8 million appropriated on line 1.19. It talks about how those funds would be spent for faculties and physicians to teach at the eight-year residency program sites, mobile dental clinics, and expansions of geriatric education and family programs, which is much needed. And then line 2.5 is the $4 million in each fiscal year for the Minnesota Discovery Research and Innovation Economy funding program for cancer care and research. Line 2.8 appropriates $500,000 in fiscal year 2024 and in fiscal year 2025, specifically for the Morris Branch tuition waivers, which are in statute. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne. I think we'll have staff walk us through, and then we'll go to questions.
Mr. Chair and members, so I think it would be helpful to look at sort of the bill as introduced and then the amendment. So the bill as introduced reflects the University of Minnesota's original request. The University of Minnesota's current operations and maintenance base, which was set 2 years ago in the last Higher Education Omnibus Act, is $620,818,000 per year. So if on 1.7 of the bill as introduced, the operations and maintenance amounts are updated. So there's an additional $80 million in fiscal year 2024 and an additional $125 million in fiscal year 2025. All the language in House File 1840 is just the standard University of Minnesota operations and maintenance language. Nothing is new there in that bill, but the purposes for the additional funding that the university has requested, a total of $205 million over the biennium, are for core mission support, that's $135 million, a Minnesota resident scholarship, that's $60 million, and system-wide safety and security updates, and that's $10 million. So that's an additional $205 million for operations and maintenance over the base. That's the original request. The amendment that was just adopted reflects the university's supplemental request. So that adds an additional $97.5 million. And the purposes for that are the American Indian Scholars Program, which is a $9 million new program over the course of the biennium. And the programmatic language for that is in the amendment at 1.8 to 1.17. The enrollment-driven tuition shortfall, that's an additional $48 million over the biennium. There's no specific program language for that in the amendment. That's just part of the overall operations and maintenance amount. And then there's the funded resident undergraduate tuition freeze, which is $40.5 million for the biennium. And the language for that requesting the tuition freeze is at 1.5 to 1.7 of the A1 amendment. So together, 1840, as amended by the A1, reflects both the university's original request for operations and maintenance and its supplemental request for operations and maintenance.
All right. So, members, to the bill is amended, and I'm going to start with Mr. France. at the last meeting that we had a discussion of the change that the university had in its request as a result of the March 1st letter. One of the issues that is prominent is in January and February, you had been accepting a tuition increase at 3.5% on the main campus and then a 1% on the other campuses. And then suddenly on March 1st, it changed to a tuition freeze, and you had discovered the COVID cliff. Ms. Thompson did an excellent job at the last hearing, and I think the document she presented to us would be a model document for the university to present to us in January of all budget years. I think that would be a document that would set the stage for a very clear understanding of the budget and needs of the university. So, Ms. Trance, can you explain to the committee why the changes took place when for 2 months you were accepting a tuition increase and you hadn't recognized the COVID cliff?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to do so, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about that. So one of the things that we did, just to remind folks, in October of this last year, the president presented to the Board of Regents the original $205 million request that you all saw when we submitted that to this committee. That was done in October. In advance of the management and budget deadline of October 15th that the universities are required to submit their budget recommendations to the governor. That recommendation was based upon our June estimate or projection for the tuition receipts we would get for this academic year, 22-23. And so it was in January and February. So every February we do, not unlike management and budget, a February review of our forecast numbers, and the biggest one in the budget is, of course, the tuition receipts. It was in January and February that we started getting indications, and we came to our conclusion in February that the $990 million estimate that we were basing our October request to the governor was now going to be $966 million instead of $990 million, or $24 million difference. So at that point, we became concerned because, as you know, our budget request, original budget request for the $45 million in core and the other items is based upon a base, and that base had all of a sudden come to our attention was going to be $24 million less at the end of the fiscal 23 going into the next budget year. So we believed it was our obligation to let you know about that shortfall. Now, the significance of that was typically our shortfall is less than 1% either up or below our projections. This year it was 3%. Now, 3% may not sound like a lot, but $24 million is a lot. And we felt it was our obligation to make sure this committee had all the information that we had in terms of the base change in tuition. So the interesting thing about that process was we were aware of, and you've had really great discussions around here, good questions about what were those causes, what was happening. And as Vice President Tonneson, as you mentioned, did an excellent job of describing the different factors that led to that. We were aware of all of those factors, but what happened this year was all of them were magnified beyond what we anticipated. So it was that realization at that point in late February, early March, when we came back to the committee and said, we need to make that adjustment. And when we did that, we also believed at that point that this was an opportunity to correct that initial request that we made and make that adjustment, but also to take into account knowing that we felt much better about what we would project for fiscal 24, we felt that adding the tuition freeze was an opportunity that we should present to the committee as well. So that's this timing that led up to that, and that's we came to you and this committee because of we need you as the state as an important partner in supporting the university, but we also need to share the information that we have when we have it.
I appreciate the answer, and since Representative Cleburne is sitting there, she made the observation a couple of meetings ago that perhaps the university made its change because it actually listened to what the committee was doing.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Frank.
But of course, Mr. Chair, we're sometimes slow learners, but we are learners. And we did hear a lot of concern about, as we were talking about the enrollment challenges in general, all the systems face across the country and in Minnesota, it became more and more apparent as this year kept going and we kept getting questions from the committee about what are we going to do about these enrollment challenges, the system enrollment challenges for the future? And we talked a little bit about, you know, that the Twin Cities on the undergraduate, we have really strong, we have the last 2 years have had the two highest enrollment years ever for Minnesotans in total, and also in the percent of Minnesotans. So we're really feeling good about that part, but these other issues are concerning. And the best way, one of the best ways we believe to address the enrollment challenges is part of it is our Greater Minnesota Scholarship Program, but also the tuition freeze for 2 years. So yes, we did listen and we did learn. Thank you.
Members, questions? Representative Colton.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question may be for nonpartisan staff, but looking at, I guess it'd be the A1 amendment lines 1.5 through 1.7 refers to the tuition freeze, and I'm obviously aware that the university and the Board of Regents are sort of constitutionally separate, so there's very little in terms of legislative language that we can adopt. But I guess my question really is, knowing that in the past tuition freezes have been legislated, how does this language compare to what's been done in the past? Because I mean, the reason I ask is, you know, again, understanding we can request, but I know there are sort of more creative ways to sort of enforce, and so I'm just wondering what that comparison would be like.
Mr. Hupp.
Mr. Chair, members, so the request language is what has been used in past years when there is a tuition freeze mandated by the legislature. One thing that could be done differently is the legislature could specifically say that a certain amount of money within that O&M appropriation is for the purpose of the tuition freeze. So tie a very specific amount of money to the tuition freeze. That's another alternative.
Representative Coulter, the last time there was a tuition freeze was in 2013 and 2014 that was paid for. The chair remembers that quite well. And the language that we used in 2013 and 2014, we will resurrect for this omnibus bill also to ensure that if we do a tuition freeze, it will be a tuition freeze that's paid for and the university will apply in the way that this committee and the legislature wants it applied.
Thank you.
Representative Coulter.
That's all. Thank you.
Other questions, members? Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cleavorn. I'm curious about the new scholarship for American Indian undergrads, and then how we're still then giving $500,000 for Morris for tuition waivers. It seems like if we're starting this new program, that program may no longer be necessary. So could you explain how they interact to me? Thank you.
Mr. Franz.
Mr. Chair, and I may need some help on this one. So, one of the ways we were so appreciative of Commissioner Olson and Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan and their support for this American Indian Scholar Program, because in the past that tuition scholarship program is just this money that never shows up, and so this was an opportunity for the state to support that. And so one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we did was to support the Morris promise as it is, as understood. And so what will happen is we will coordinate that the new program with the current requirements. And so there will be no overpayment. We'll just have to coordinate those items to make sure they calibrate. Is that correct? Yeah. So we will monitor that carefully and make sure that the actual funds from OHE that go toward this program are matched under the statute, and there's no, you know, double counting, so to speak.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would appreciate that. It's not as clear cut in either how it's in the amendment in the statute or in your answer as I think we need to clean that up. And secondly, perhaps this is to Representative Cleavorn. It says the appropriation includes funding for the U of M to provide additional student support services to administer the program, but there's no percentage given. So I think leaving it that open-ended is perhaps unwise. So I just wondered if you could provide some guidance on what you think is necessary for the tuition portion of this versus support services and admin. Thank you.
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski. And because this is a work in progress and it is being held over for possible inclusion, I'm happy to look into those numbers and see exactly what they are and how we can. And I think Chair Pulaski said it best earlier. We want to make sure that these dollars go to the students. And so the language that will end up in his final author's DE will be the language that will prevail. So thank you.
Representative Robbins, in 2013, we actually had the legislative auditor look over the language, and it helped a great deal in crafting it. Any further discussion to this? Seeing none, then I think the work of the committee for today is going to end a little bit early. I want to thank you all for attending. Members, it's likely that targets may be addressed this week, and once they are, we'll have meetings and we'll be beginning to put together the omnibus bill. So with that, meeting is adjourned.